You're tuned to Focus on Campus, a weekly show which highlights faculty, staff, and students here at the University of Texas at El Paso. Good morning, I'm Luis Sainz, your host for Focus on Campus, and join us today are Steve Elliott, Laura Castañeda, and also Doug Mitchell, and they're here to talk about a special program that has been going on all week here at the university in our department, and it's a part of a Dow Jones endowment. And first of all, I'd like to take all the time to welcome all of you to us be here with us this morning.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
And I didn't mention this at the beginning about Laura and Steve, our college professors, and they're here to learn more about our trade so that they can pass it on to the students, because sometimes in this business, as we learn, whatever you learned yesterday is already gone tomorrow, and so we have to do it all over again. But with us also is Doug Mitchell, and Doug is an old friend, actually a friend I've known for a long time, not an old friend. And I met him when he was working for NPR, and he was very kind to a lot of our students, helped us a lot because of a lot of our students used to go to the student projects at NHJ. And Doug, thank you for being with us. And tell us a little bit about, this is your fourth year involved in this Dow Jones program. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, as you mentioned, the goal is to do role reversal. So we have the professors come and be students. And so they will go away with a better understanding of the – not that they don't have an understanding of how students struggle, but with a clearer sense of purpose and a better idea of how to answer the ever-changing, ever-evolving technological but also journalistic questions that students will have when they return to their classroom. So this is the fourth year we've done it. We're blessed that Dow Jones has continued to see the value of the work that we're doing here at UTEP and continue to fund the program.
Now, as far as the program goes, I'm sure that you had quite a few applicants. How are the applicants chosen?
We get on a conference call, and there's a spreadsheet done by Angel. And it's like I sit on a lot of selection committees, so we basically rate the professors on their skill sets. And this is a questionnaire that they fill out. So they rate themselves. We take their information, put it in a spreadsheet, and then we make a decision as to geographical diversity, men and women, and a couple of other areas in which we make decisions.
And because it's really hard to rate yourself, because a lot of us, when they ask us to talk about themselves, ourselves, some people have no problem whatsoever.
Right.
TV news people. I used to be one of those anyway.
But
but anyway, I came to the good side. Radio, you know, when they tell you to answer some questions about yourself, it's hard to blow your own horn. And it's also, you know, people aren't just naturally want to answer the way they think people should answer, whether it be a ratings question about a program or anything. They answer the way they think that should be done. And as I mentioned, we have a couple of professors with us, and they are Laura Castañeda and Doug Mitchell. Steve Elliott, and they are here as part of this program. And let's start with you, Laura. Tell us a little bit about why did you decide to apply for this program?
Well, I remember seeing it about or hearing about it last year or maybe the year before. I do attend a lot of the conferences, and I remember somebody mentioned it, and then you just get busy and you go about your business, but it came past my desk again, and I started looking at the application process and what they were asking, and I thought to myself, my goodness, I am deficient in so many of these areas, and if I'm deficient, that means my students are deficient. And so I just looking at the things that they were going to offer. And also I was telling Angel I was a little bit misled in the application. I thought it only applied to border journalism. And that's kind of what I specialize in, not only in my own career, but I'm launching a class in border journalism starting in the fall. So I thought, wow, how appropriate to go, to be involved in something like that at this very moment when I'm putting together a syllabi for border journalism. But even without the border journalism, it's just invaluable to be able to get the professional development.
And we'll come back and talk a little bit more with Steve. But we've been mentioning Angel, and people are wondering who the heck is Angel. And Angel is, of course, the behind-the-scenes person, which we couldn't be without. Angel, remind me of your last name.
My name is Angel Cancino.
Okay. Now, Angel, you have been busy actually weeks before the program started. And if it wasn't for you, these journalist students would be without a lot of things, food, water, a lot of everything else. And you've been setting that up. How difficult has that been?
This is the fourth year for me doing this, so I'm pretty much used to it. I just hope that they are having a good time, and it has been enjoyable most than anything.
And Steve, you are also a journalism professor, and not that, as Laura mentioned, there was no prerequisite as far as being border journalist, but you come from another border state. And tell us about how did you come across this application, and why did you apply? What do you want to get out of this?
I teach at Arizona State University at the Walter Cronkite School of Journalism and Mass Communication. And this interested me because I've been teaching now for 7 years after 19 years with the Associated Press. And in that time, social media was invented. Every computer program I've worked on has been revamped or gone out of business, and we've started on a new one. And everything I've learned along the way, it's been entirely self-taught. Most of what I've learned about multimedia has been from my students. Which is wonderful. They're excellent at teaching me. But I thought it would be really fun to put myself in the position of my students to go out there and frantically get the content and have somebody point out the mistakes, the learn by failing method. Yes. and I knew by doing this I would throw myself into it and have that experiential learning that is really, you don't get when you sit behind a desk and read a book. So
I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to ask Doug. Doug, you've been very experienced in working with young people. What is the difference as far as working with young people and with seasoned professionals?
In this context, there's not a whole lot. They're a lot crankier. But I really enjoy, like, on the final full day of editing this past week, there's stress. I can't quite figure out how, and this is the art part of putting a story together. Mm-hmm. There's a deadline looming, and there's a little bit of stress coming in there. I don't know how to do this, and how do I do that, and oh my God. And so I have to laugh, because I thought, you know, aren't you the professors in front of this almost every day? And I think this is a very holistic way of them going back into the classroom when they do go back in the classroom and remembering what it was like. But again, in a very nurturing environment.
So what is the agenda? They got here, I think, Saturday or Sunday, correct?
Saturday.
Okay. So what did they have to do starting Monday morning? Obviously, they had a little bit of time to kind of get to know each other.
We tried to do some exercises. So myself and Monica Ortiz Uribe, who's one of our partners, instructors on this project, we do audio training on Saturday. We do video training on Sunday. They get the chance to go out and make whatever mistakes they need to make, come back and learn that even though we had a full day, you still didn't get a chance to do everything. Try to stay organized with both audio and video, come up with a workflow process among your team, and then we will on the exercise day. And then on Monday is the reporting. So the mentors got together secretly and looked at their bios and looked at the spreadsheet and how they rated themselves, and then we put teams together. And then we picked out some stories for them to do, and then on Monday, all the day Monday, and for my team, we had to go back out on Tuesday morning, gather all our content, gather all our interviews, overshoot, over-record, too much stuff, and then come back, and then now they were downstairs fixing and putting their stuff together.
Laura and Steve, I'm not sure if you've had a lot of experience in working with audio or just television or print. But I overheard someone yesterday say, my gosh, audio reporting is hard.
I spent almost 20 years as a television person that you mentioned earlier, those TV people. But back in the day.
Well, that was one for 10. Okay.
Back in the day, I had someone at my side. Most of them were men. Because you didn't have a lot of camera women, but they pushed all the buttons. All I had to do was worry about the editorial content. And even under deadline, I brought the story back and I wrote that script as fast as I could and handed it off to somebody else to edit. So with, as Steve was mentioning, with all the technology changing, television has changed tremendously. So I didn't have to worry about that. And now my students do have to worry about it. They're backpack journalists. They're doing it all. So for me to be under this deadline, it's my students would find it comical.
We won't tell them. How about you, Steve?
Well, my reporter's notebook never needed batteries, and you didn't need to make sure that the button was pushed so that you could take notes. You only had to worry that there was ink in your pen. So, yes, audio is hard. There's all kinds of things that can go wrong, but it's also extremely exciting to the way a voice or a visual can bring a story to life. It's mind-blowing to be able to tell stories in this way. And I'm excited to be practicing journalism, still practicing journalism today, and to have a chance to get this kind of training. Everything is changing so fast, and I feel like maybe I just caught up a little bit.
Now, the program, when the program is over, are you all going to have a new show put together that people can watch on the web?
Well, Borderzine is the publication platform, if you will.
Okay, the Borderzine.
We use the
word
platforms a lot now, since we're going off to jump in the water. But Borderzine is the publication platform. There will be multimedia stories there. So there will be audio slideshows. There will be video. There's one person on my team is a magazine editor and writer. So he's writing text and with stills, still photography. So there'll be a variety of different stories in a variety of different forms, all located on the borderzine.com website.
One of the things that comes to mind is Nancy and I were talking about this before, with technology, the way it's come up, sometimes people who are not journalists will post the story on YouTube or on Facebook without checking the facts. So they beat the professionals. And again, those facts aren't right. And Sita was wondering about, well, what do we teach them? Do we teach them the technology? We teach them the ethics? We teach them the journalism? What is it, or where are we going? And not that, you know, she was complaining, but wondering, where are we going?
Laura? I would just say that even though the technology is changing, the principles of journalism still have to apply. So you still have to teach ethics. You still have to teach, you know, how to develop sources and check your facts. That's never going to go away. It shouldn't go away. But with the technology, it just makes it faster, easier, and better to get information. But the principles, they need to still be in place.
What about, either you or Steve, because I have a problem with this. When I tell my students, you are supposed to remain objective. You do not have a say-so in this story. Yet, in fact, I have a Facebook page, and the only reason I kicked and fought but I got one because I teach social media. But I will not post anything that's opinion related as far as the news or anything like that, because I still consider myself a journalist and I don't want anybody to know, you know, what side I'm on. But some people think that it's okay, that you can use it as a soapbox. And I think what hurt us might be the when they took away the fairness doctrine. The fact that, you know, you don't have to have the other side if you don't want to.
I lie awake at night and worry about my students because I grew up in a different era. And now with Facebook and Twitter, we are building these case files of digital breadcrumbs maybe you didn't know you were going to be a journalist, but for 5 years you've been posting this, that, and the other thing, and that follows you. And we speak a lot to our students about the issue of personal branding. And about how the codes of ethics that journalists follow, nothing changes. You know, how you behave on social media is you are a journalist on social media, even on your own time. But there's nothing we can do to recreate the past 5 years before you decided to become a journalist. All we can do is manage what you're doing while you're with us and learning how to be a journalist. So I worry about students. We talk a lot about that with our students.
My daughter is going to be a high school science teacher. She's going off to college in the fall.
Terrific.
She has Instagram, and she's crazy on Instagram. She says it's private, but I don't think anything ever is.
No.
So I've had to even though she's not in journalism whatsoever, I think you have to have a personal responsibility and social media. Now, there are lots of people who don't, but that doesn't mean you have to join them. And for me, I always I'll post opinions about journalism education, and I'll say, what do you think? And encourage conversation. And that's basically where I leave it.
My only opinion I'll give is on freedom of the press.
Right,
yeah,
right.
That's it.
I usually tend to repost articles that have to do with border journalism or scholarship information or things like that. But I do also talk to my students a lot about it. The ones that pay more attention are the ones that are job seeking, because that tends to be where you can kind of make some sense to them again and say, look, you know, if you don't understand the ethics behind it or the political, you know, stance you could be taking, at least think about someone's going to Google your name and they're going to see what you're up to, and it could mean the difference between whether or not you get hired.
Or if something is wrong and you can post and say, wait a minute, you better check your sources or proper attribution, because people see something on Facebook, they automatically take it as gospel and they forward it to the next person, and before you know it, Abraham Lincoln is saying, I did not know that woman. Stuff like that. Well, anyway, we want to thank you all very much for being with us here today. It's been a short 15 minutes, and we've been visiting with Professors Steve Elliott and Laura Castañeda, also with Doug Mitchell, and Angel. And Angel is a behind-the-scenes person, which is supposed to be the Secret Service guy. We don't know anything about him. But anyway, we want to thank you all very much for being with us here today, and thank you for being here in El Paso, and I hope you enjoyed your stay.
Thank you.
I did.
Focus on Campus is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Focus on Campus. I'm Louis Sines.